Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me this week, we've got William Matrix Mouth Miller.
How you doing there, Blake?
Doing good. We've also got Justin Fick.
How you guys doing?
Doing good. Let's just jump into it. This is the best damn podcast ever for Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. Slow news week.
We gotta get the show on the can, because Blake Buck, don't you have a school assignment?
Man, my Spanish test. I got about an hour and 20 minutes left on my Spanish test.
What are you writing about in Spanish?
You know, hablo español.
I should not have opened this up. This is just gonna turn racist so fast.
That was legitimate Spanish. Anyway,
queso pantalones.
Let's go into the news as quickly as possible, Blake Buck.
So, a couple of stories in the news. First up, there's a couple more details coming out on SSX, the new snowboarding iteration by EA. Does it have an official title? Oh, excuse me. SSX Deadly Descents. What, did you just, there was a room full of words and you just threw a ball at it? And you're like, all right, Deadly Descent. Done.
This sounds like SSX with a taste of Mortal Kombat thrown in.
Right.
Yeah. Is this a tube game? Well, what kind of game is this?
Well, that's one thing I have a problem with. While this was revealed last December, it almost looked, the way the trailer looked, it looked kind of like a almost Call of Duty game. It was very strange, very like realistic. And I was very turned off by it, but apparently since then they put out a couple new previews, some new details. It's looking like the classic SSX formula, but at the same time, the thing that really scares me is that, let me read the exact verbiage here. The game features the same insane tricks of the previous game. However, in a break with the past, there will be no boundaries on the mountain, allowing players to free ride virtually anywhere they please. Oh, God.
So it's open world. So it's like Burnout Paradise as opposed to all the other Burnouts.
I guess, but it seems like the strength of this game was the fact that it was in tube. Seems like as soon as you take snowboarding out of awesome tube, you've lost a lot.
Yeah, I mean, snowboarding in general is the quintessential tube sport. They even play it in a half tube most of the time. Like, the most boring parts are, like, getting to the tube. And it seems like that's the part they added to make this game better. I mean, what's different about this take?
Well, they say that during the presentation they had a few days ago, Todd Batty, great name, described the three foundations of SSX as being race it, trick it, or survive it. The latter will be a full-on display during the game's survival mode, which will have players descend the mountain under extreme conditions, blizzards, avalanches, rock slides, fogs, and this sounds so bad.
Also, I'm still hung up on when you said it looks like this is going to be more like Call of Duty.
Well, from the first trailer, it was because
now I'm just picturing snowboards with guns and Nazis.
God, you know, that would really be a much more interesting direction to go with this. They might as well.
Yeah, because no one really has. I mean, what was it? Contra Shattered Soldier had that part where right. after you blow up this building and you're flying to the air, you just happen to land on a snowboard.
Well,
and then you shoot shit.
And Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 did have a little snowboarding section. But, you know, I guess at the same time, snowboarding games have kind of fallen by the wayside. I mean, what was the last big snowboarding game to come out? I can't even think of any. I guess the last SSX, maybe? I mean, what was that? They had 1080, and then what was the other one? Like 12,
I'm sure there was
1360
some sort of,
something snowboarding.
I'm sure there was some sort of Sean White branded turd that came out from somebody.
SSX Tricky was such a good game, and I don't know why they've just strayed further and further from that formula. It was basically like NBA Jam snowboarding, and I don't know why it seems like they've intentionally gotten further and further away from that. But then again, you know, they're the marketing gurus, not me. I mean, I guess people want a more realistic snowboarding game.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, just comparing that to, you know, things like Burnout and Burnout Paradise, like, I don't really know if I agree with that. I think people are just looking at that like, oh, we need this open world thing because Burnout did it, and this is the hot shit now. Is all these open world games, but Like, I don't really know if it applies necessarily.
I really don't like open world, because as soon as you go to an open world, you lose the tube. You just got, you know, it's like trying to play Burnout on, you know, in, what's that, Hyrule Field in Ocarina of Time. Like, what's the point?
Yeah, it seems like the that part in Call of Duty where you hop on the snowboard and you're going down the hill shooting dudes. That's like a 30 seconds of fun. Like, you could take it, you could take that and make a whole tape out of it, I think.
Maybe.
That's where I would go. I would add Nazis and guns and bears and motorcycles.
God damn, we need some bears. Anyway, it's
yeah, we should combine SSX with Call of Duty with Cabela's Big Game Hunter or whatever it is.
Anyway.
Oh man, yeah, it could be like an arcade deal, right? You're on what was that game we talked about last show with the big red bike? You're on that.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
No. You know, the one in the arcade.
Oh, Stun Runner.
Stun Runner. Yeah, you're on the Stun Runner bike, and then you have the Big Game Hunter shotgun peripheral.
Dude, no, not making this up. There is a game like that. I believe it's called, like, I want to say Tango and Cash, but that's a movie with Kurt Russell and Sylvester Stallone. But no, I think it was like Clyde and something, but it was basically the same thing. And you were driving a car. This was like early 90s, you know, like Mode 7 vector graphics, very, not even vector graphics, just very cheesy scaling. But you had the wheel, and then you had a gun that you pulled out, like, and shot at the screen. It was fucking amazing.
Why did we stray from that?
Right. Yeah, what happened to those games?
Yeah, I want to be able to drive and shoot. Not shoot, not like, you know, what is it? What is it? Twisted Metal shoot, but, like, I have a gun in my hand shooting.
Right. Dude, speaking of which, like, not too long ago, I actually went to a GameWorks in Las Vegas the last time I was out there, and just out of pure nostalgia, I saw that the big fucking Jurassic Park game. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I remember playing this back in like the late 80s or whatever.
Yeah, it was
so fucking
good.
I jumped in and I played it, and it was the worst fucking thing in the world.
It has not aged well.
That game does not hold
no,
up.
Dude, I have, no, this is not making, I have played that game recently. Are you talking about the one where you're in the car?
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
That game is great. I mean, sure, it's like a quarter sucker and not really a good game, but there's something to be said about, like, yeah, it's the same sort of thing. You're driving, you're shooting, it's insanity. It's like the same way with the Terminator 2 game, right? It's not very good, but it's still good. You enjoy it on a, I love this movie and this is so incredibly cheesy level.
Yeah, they just need to have more games where you are both holding a wheel and a gun at the same time. or if even just having, like, the second seat with some sort of turret or something. Like,
all right.
I think there's so many possibilities for arcades. Right. Here. Like, it's just,
look, I'm officially copywriting Guns and Wheels, the game. Somebody's going to owe me some money one day.
Guns and Wheels. It's like Jets and Guns.
Yeah.
Except Guns and Wheels. I think Rake and Grass already has that one unlocked in the book. You may be out of luck.
Or just put it in a semi truck and call it Guns and Mud Flaps.
Dude, I wish those guys spoke English. They'd be awesome to have on the show.
Yeah. What have they done anything since that game? I don't think they have.
I think they've done some stuff, but it didn't blow up nearly as much as
Jets and Guns are the best. They did that. They did a strategy type game that I forget the name of. Yeah. And then they had two or three iPhone titles.
Ah, well, I guess it's, you can only capture the magic for a minute. You know, that's how. I mean, the same thing way we were talking about that last week. You know, Angry Birds. They got lightning in a bottle. We don't know how it got there, but we better sell it. Anyway, so this new SSX Deadly Descent will be coming out January 2012 for PS3 and Xbox 360. Oh boy! All right, Justin Fick, what you got for us?
All right, so in the latest in our tussle between Sony and George Geo-Hot-Hots. So there are settlement details that have begun to surface. So Hots has agreed to a permanent injunction against his publishing methods to hack the PS3 online store. He could also face fines. So he's basically agreed to not engage in a range of activities that includes, quote, reverse engineering, decompiling, and disassembling any portion of a Sony product, using any tools to bypass, disable, or circumvent any encryption, security, or authentication, blah, 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 not using any hardware to cause a Sony product to accept or use unauthorized, legal, or pirated software, or bunch of whole list of things. Basically, do not touch a PS3 and do not sign up for an account.
This is so fucking stupid. He just signed the user license agreement again. Yeah. That's like all they got him to do. Yeah. He just signed another in-user license agreement. That's it.
Yeah. And I understand.
He's not in jail or anything.
Well, I understand Sony doesn't want the bad press of going after this kid and ruining his life. I understand they're trying to avoid that bad press. But at the same time, if this is true, why go after him at all? You know what? If you want to half-ass this, they're like, don't be hacking, kid. Like, that's what he got off with. I swear, that's what drives me insane. Like, okay, if I go to the liquor store and rob it, I'm in jail for 6 years. This kid probably caused thousands of millions of dollars of damage. Oh, well, quit hacking. That's all. And
my favorite.
Violates this agreement, he will pay. Or he will face fines of $10,000 per violation with a cap of $250,000.
Yeah, but $10,000 is nothing compared to how much they're losing.
Again. Yeah, really.
Again, just the user license agreement. My favorite part of this is his response. Like, I see this thread on Kotaku or whatever. It's got a picture of this dude. He's like talking to some crowd of people. Why the fuck they gave him some venue, I have no idea. But he's talking to this crowd of people. And he's like, I'm never going to buy a Sony product again. I'm boycotting. That's like the equivalent. That's the teenage equivalent of like holding your breath until you get what you want. That's
or abstinence,
right?
you gotta remember, he's a kid. You know, he's a kid. How old is this kid? Like 13, 15, something like that. I mean, you know, he had this is what it's kind of sad. He had a place here to make a statement, and he kind of blew it. But that's what you do. Yeah. You know, you don't know any better, I guess. You could have made a statement on like openness of computing, or you know, end-user licensing agreements being too restrictive, or said something powerful and said you're like, I don't be like PlayStation. All right,
I don't be like PlayStation.
Thanks a lot, GeoHot. Great hacker name, by the way. You know what? My new name is Blake GeoHot Buck. I'm just gonna incorporate it into my own title. That's how good it is. So, Wee Miller, do you have any updates for us, or you got something else?
Yeah, I got a couple little pieces of news here. The first little bit I found interesting. So, you know, the 3DS launches, and we got nothing. We got no Zelda. We got no Mario. It's bone dry in that 3DS tape. There is a Zelda forthcoming, though. It's a port of the original Ocarina of Time for the Nintendo 64. But what caught my eye is that this title is actually being developed by a third party. Now, third party called Grezzo.
Now, keep in mind, this is not the first time this has happened, particularly on the handheld.
It's not the first time it's happened. It's not the first time it's happened on a handheld, but I can't recall a Zelda game being made by a third party. Same as I can't recall a Mario being made by a third
party. Legend of Zelda, Oracle of Ages, Legend of Zelda, Oracle of Seasons, sister games that came out on the Game Boy Color were developed by Capcom.
So is Four Sword, I believe.
Four Sword was Capcom, too.
And to be honest, Ages and Seasons, fantastic Zelda games.
They were good.
So was Four Sword.
Yeah, those are good. I mean, and it seems like, why not? But at the same time, at this point, it's like, Nintendo, what do? You just license out your IP. They're like the fucking Hello Kitty of the gaming industry now. They don't own any of their manufacturing. It's all just licensed to whoever's making shit.
It's not, though. I mean, this doesn't happen that often with their IP, which is why it's kind of caught my eye.
But at the same time, I mean, it seems like, to me, I think we talked about this before. I think Nintendo's problem is that they're not only are they not developing new franchises, but they're not developing their current franchises to their fullest potential. And that costs money. Right? I mean, and I understand, why spend a lot of money to make Zelda amazing when it's sort of the THQ dilemma. THQ has the Pixar rights to all, and so why make Cars the video game or Up the video game good when we could just make it okay and it'll sell the same number of copies?
Yeah, I mean, I love Ocarina of Time, but, you know, this is a launch game for the 3DS. Why am I getting a port? I don't care if it's got a new water temple. God, I hope not.
Why does it? No. Can we just pause for? Why does everybody bitch about the water temple? There's nothing fucking wrong with the water temple. Everybody bitches about the water temple.
I never remember having a problem.
Yeah, I don't either. I thought it was a fine level, but like I look back now and everybody's like, "Thank God there's a new water temple." What were you like six and you couldn't beat it? It's not that hard, dude. Calm down.
I thought it was annoying.
See, that's
like I don't. The thing is, I don't really remember it one way or the other. So I don't remember it being particularly annoying.
It had a really cool art style, I thought, because like the whole time you could see the water reflections on the wall and stuff. I mean, it was a puzzle centric level, and you had to think. Oh, I'm sorry, you had to use your brain in a Zelda game. It wasn't that bad of a level. You know what's a bad level? Jabu Jabu's belly. I fucking hated that level. Nobody bitches about Jabu Jabu's belly.
Oh, is that where you had to carry the bitch on your shoulders?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I didn't like that.
No one ever wants to do an escort mission in a game ever.
No.
Anyway, so what? Are there any other details on this?
Not really. I mean, it seems like... One thing that's cool about this, Grizzo. I'm going to read from the article here. Grizzo is a small third party studio created by Koichi Ishii. He's the creator of Square Enix's Mana franchise, so Secret of Mana, Mana World, all that.
Mana World. Wait, what is Mana World?
Or World of Mana, or whatever the PlayStation 1 game was.
Was there?
Isn't that what it was called?
What was that? I think I know what you're talking about. No, I'm thinking of what's that one? It was a Super Nintendo game, but it was too many megabits, so it didn't come to the U.S.
It was kind of 63.
Not Phantasy Star, something Star.
Star Ocean. Yeah, yeah.
Star Ocean. Ocean. Yep. But that's not the same thing, right?
Not the same thing. Okay. No. Different people. And the company also has a WiiWare exclusive release called Line Attack Heroes, and I've actually seen some of this game, too. Have you seen this game, Justin Fick? It's kind of like a really simple. It reminds me a lot of Ogre Battle. I think.
Oh, nice! No, I haven't seen it.
But it looks pretty cool. It's sort of like a simplified version of Final Fantasy Tactics, with a cool art style. So, anyway, I'd love to see what these guys could do if it wasn't a port they were having to work on. But
yeah,
I don't know.
And also I would just love to see Nintendo sort of go back to the original, I guess, feeling behind what made Zelda a Zelda game was, you know, just that huge feeling of just openness and exploration. Like, I think Zelda's gotten shoehorned into that generic 3D, you know, adventure genre.
I think, because if you look at the first Zelda, no game ever had that much like gameplay space ever when it came out. Then you look at the Zelda on Super Nintendo, and much the same way it had the light world. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The thing that defines Zelda is the huge open world that has, you know, it's open, but it's not generic. There's a lot of personality to it. And it seems like now...
Yeah, because like, the thing is, like in the first Zelda, I could have ran my ass to any one of the first eight out of nine dungeons. In fact, I could have gone into the ninth one. You just can't explore it until you beat the other eight.
Right.
The thing is, you can go anywhere you want in that game, into any dungeon you want, and run around. You can do them in any order, for the most part.
You know what? Let's go back to the 80s. let's just get a time machine, go back to the 80s, and enjoy these games again. But we can't.
We cannot.
Damn it.
There's no reason we can't recreate that same feeling.
Right. I'm not saying, like, because what was that stupid game that came out maybe a year or two? It was some like four-wheeler racing game. Like, let's call it Track. I don't even know what the name of it was. But it was like, we got the biggest game world ever made in any game ever. But it was just like generic, you know, procedurally generated countryside. And it's not about the size. It's about having character and like, I don't know. Is there a difference? Are we just more jaded? Is there a difference between the old Zeldas and the new Zeldas?
I think so. I think the new Zeldas are definitely tending toward, you know, going back to a sort of like a, I don't know, almost level based.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like the original Zeldas were groundbreaking, and now they're sort of more nostalgic, right? And I'm not saying Zelda has to be Shadow of the Colossus or something really weird and out there, but at the same time, why not? Why not make something like really different and take a risk? I feel like Nintendo is playing it too safe with their big franchises. Not that Mario needs to be raping women and shooting bitches, but I don't know. especially as like gamers from that generation mature, it seems like they're not really doing anything to draw them in.
Yeah, actually, I mean, just like, you know, just thinking out loud, I mean, you mentioned Shadow of the Colossus. Like, Shadow of the Colossus was kind of, it's kind of streamlined by that beam of light you have, but, yeah. You know, imagine if there was no beam of light, and you can just go to any Colossus you want at any time. And
in
you
a
just
way,
had to seek them all out.
In a way, Shadow of the Colossus, to me, is kind of like the new Zelda, in a way. Because no game had ever really been made like that. And not that, like, oh, it was so big and expansive. But it was different, and it drew you into this world, and it was interesting to learn about the world and all of its parts. And I feel like Zelda has kind of lost that. It feels, I don't know, I guess I'm being jaded, but it feels like very directed and scripted now, like go here and
I don't think it's jade. I think that's just, you know, that was the safe evolution of Zelda.
Right.
But you know, I think that's just how that franchise has changed, and you know, like Metroid kind of changed as well. Like Metroid went from also a very exploration-based 2D game to, you know, becoming a first-person shooter with a few secret passages here and there, but
right, but it's basically not Burnout. It's the tube. You know, the last two games were just go here, you have to do it. Not that, oh, it's so important, you can do things out of order, but when you have that feeling of, I feel like that's the key, is like exploration in a lot of games, and especially these classic franchises has been lost.
Man, but
I tried
like
so hard to play that new Wii Metroid tape. Oh man,
Prime 3
fought back. It fought back real hard.
Yeah.
Every time I started enjoying it, they would stop and make me watch a cutscene about a character that I had spent my entire childhood dreaming up in my head, and now they're ruining it. Nice job, Nintendo.
Oh, you're talking about Other M.
Yeah, Other End.
Okay. Yeah, I don't even want to play that one.
Yeah, God, they gave her a voice and a personality that it's just.
Well,
you know,
no. At the same time, there's more. I think the and this could almost be a discussion, but I think that a lot of games go with this. You know, the voiceless hero who doesn't say anything, and so you can insert yourself. I think it's good to a point, but at the same time, it really limits your options from a creative storytelling standpoint. You know,
but you got to.
Yeah, it depends on the game and what kind of story you want to tell.
You got to play to the, like.
I'm saying by giving
over and over on the show.
Okay, even though I know that this game sucks, apparently, I think that you could have a much deeper and more interesting story with Samus, if she had a voice and can talk, than if she didn't. But the problem is that the shit she says is just generic bullshit, awful plot. Rather than
I totally disagree.
Really,
I disagree. I think you can tell a really, really cool story with the silent protagonist. I mean, I think that's just a creative constraint, and they copped out. I think that's what.
Well, I mean, look at Super Maybe. Metroid.
Yeah, exactly.
Super Metroid tells a really awesome story, and as soon as the introduction stops, there isn't a word spoken. In
yeah,
that.
You know,
There isn't a word spoken or typed or anything.
God, man, that is. Oh man, I just think that is exactly how you tell a story in a game. Exactly how you tell it. You know, I often talk about how I like Valve and how they tell us. No, Super Metroid is exactly how you tell a story in a game.
That's the way games are. That, like, I think you can tell stories in lots of different ways in games, but I think that's one of the ways that they are really, really, where they really shine.
I'm not saying you have to literally follow that, but like, oh,
no, yeah, but God, when you can leverage the player's investment like Metroid did and tell this sort of this narrative framework that they can just like fill in the gaps on, all of a sudden you have this great piece of art. And when you start making Samus talk and you have these 20-minute long cutscenes, yeah, just shits all over that.
If any
yeah,
of you,
I mean, you know, could, I mean, conversely, like something like Final Fantasy VI also has an incredible story that could not be done if, you know, your main protagonist didn't speak a word.
Right. That's sure. What I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying, oh, you shouldn't speak or you should speak, but I'm saying that, like, there are good, powerful stories, and I feel, I mean, I don't want to sound like the ultimate cynic, though that is my job. I feel like the gaming industry has lost this powerful storytelling. I mean, what was the last game you played? You're like, that was a damn good story. I was sucked into it, and I loved it, and I just couldn't stop, and it was great. I can't even remember one. They're all the same thing at this point.
You know what really bothers me is the System Shock storytelling that we have in shooters now. Like, I've been playing through Dead Space, Batman's the same way. It's just some, it's, well, not quite so much Arkham Asylum, but especially Dead Space. It's just some dude yakking in my ear. And I know that one of the three characters that's talking to me is
bad.
Gonna be bad.
Right. The
spoiler alert.
I know what's going to happen. I mean, it's just, this has been done to death. And I also know, you know, all the new enemies are going to get introduced to me in a room that's glass that I can't get to until the guy in there has been killed by whatever I'm going to have to fight 20 minutes from now. Like, I'm so tired of these little, you know, I'm not saying that Dead Space is a great game. I've enjoyed playing it, but I'm just really, really tired of.
There are these genre cliches that, I don't know, I really do, and you're saying it's not, I really do feel like we've just gotten more jaded because we're older, but it seems like, I don't know, this just sounds like I'm just being like old fucking cranky asshole who just hates everything, but.
Well, I mean, this, you know, to a point it's becoming jaded, but I mean, on the other hand, it's like, I know, you know, we're not the only ones. Like, this is just a, I think we are indicative of a general change in taste. Like, you know, gamers as a rule are good at figuring out patterns.
Right.
You know, that's why we play games, so we can figure out the patterns and master them. So we become very good at seeing the patterns behind how these games are made.
Right.
So, you know, it's like, and then, you know, when these things become formulaic, we pick them out real fast. And I think maybe we're less tolerant of it than, say, you know, a movie buff, or, you know, someone who, you know, like a literature buff or something, just because we are, you know, we're looking to master the next cool pattern.
But I think that,
and we keep getting the same shit over and over.
I think at the same time, though, like, you know, movies have evolved, film has evolved. I feel like it feels almost like the gaming industry is stuck in this, like, lowest common denominator storytelling kind of thing. And I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's low risk too. It's low risk because, I mean, you know, you look at the budgets for, I mean, budgets for movies go up, but they kind of fluctuate. Like you have a bunch of movies that have high budget, and you have a bunch of movies that are, you know, a bunch of indie movies that are low budget. And then books, you know, books really just get finished when they get finished. You know, it's pretty much just, you know, like writers don't really hire a bunch of other shit to happen, you know, to write their book. Like, it gets written when it gets written, you know? So I think games are sort of handcuffed to this growing budget that keeps getting bigger
now,
and bigger.
I disagree with that. I think ultimately we will escape this, but my problem is
I'm not saying that we're stuck to that forever, cuz I mean, indie games don't have that.
My frustration is that it hasn't happened soon enough. It feels like we're retreading the same ground, and like, I feel like the gaming industry really hasn't evolved since the PlayStation 2, in terms of, like, storytelling. We haven't really gotten any smarter or deeper.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I mean, we're also looking at one sliver of the gaming market, too. Like, the change that you want is happening in a lot of other places. Happening in mobile, it's happening on the indie scene. It's just, it's not taking root on the very high end of these game titles.
Hmm.
And honestly, I don't think it's going to.
No, it will. I mean, look, if you look at any media, I mean, any media, books, film, that's what I love about, like, I don't know. Now we're getting real abstract. I don't know how we got so abstract all of a sudden, but like, you look at any media and it evolves. Like, I don't want to sound like a dick, but like, movies in the 70s kind of blow. I mean, not all of them suck, but like, by and large, median like quality of a 70s movie kind of sucks compared to like 2010, your median average of a movie, pretty decent, you know? And I feel like every medium sort of evolves, gets more sophisticated as the audience tastes get more sophisticated. But I feel like we've hit such a mainstream, like, gaming has grown to such a large populace that we've kind of slowed down right now in terms of sophistication.
Yeah, I'm not saying that we're not going to evolve, but I think we're going to evolve in ways that are not traditional. Like I don't think that the high end AAA games are just all going to get good. You know, I think you know, we're like, there will be the occasional really awesome blockbuster game that has an awesome story or has an awesome this or that. But I think that this change that that you and I and we all want is going to happen more on the downloadable side. I think, right. you know, things like XBLA and PSN are slowly going to, you know, sort of take over the mind share of the player, you know, right. And it's really not going to be about disc games anymore. It's going to be about these downloadable games that can get by with a lesser budget.
All right, here's my idea. Blake's novel, The Game.
Is that you just like eating a book?
No. All right, we got to move over. We've gotten way off on tangents, but I think the point of that was fuck Nintendo. Speaking of Nintendo, I got a Nintendo story. Let me do this one first.
All right.
So rumor has it, according to Engadget, that on May 15th, the Wii will be $150, a $50 price cut from its current price. So you know, this is from Engadget. God knows they engage in some of the dirtiest of online journalism tactics. So I believe this. Absolutely.
Someone was filleted.
Like, honestly, like, what did they have? Oh, man, what did they have? They had that iPhone, you know, first. They had that thing. God only knows who they blew.
Oh, that was Gizmodo.
Well, saying all the Gawker.
They're both Gawker, yeah.
Anyway, point being, probably, I mean, judging from their just awful, awful integrity and, like, paying people for things, more than likely the Wii will be $150 on May 15th. So, you know, Gawker's usually pretty spot on. If you're planning on buying a Wii between now and then, if you are, why? The bigger question. But you might want to hold off till the 15th of May.
So I was surprised that it's not already less than $200.
I know.
Like, you can get the new Xbox for almost what it costs to get a
Wii. What is a new Xbox nowadays?
It's like $200, $250,
something like that.
I think it's
$300 for the base, $400 for the Elite. Let's look it up. It is... No, you're right. It's $200 for the base with a 4 GB hard drive, and $300 with the Kinect, and then $400 with the big hard drive and the Kinect.
You could install like a game on the base one,
right?
A game and all its fucking patches. But I mean, still, like,
no, don't be bitching about patches. We've had this debate. Patches are good, even though they kind of suck. Ultimately, they're good. Don't hate on patches.
That's like saying
everybody's got the internet is prevalent now. It makes sense to do it this way. It might suck, like, but
that's like saying I'm gonna sell you this car, and I'm gonna fix like half the shit that's wrong with it. But you got to drive it a little bit first. Actually, no, I'm gonna sell you this car, and then the very first time you want to drive it, I show up to your house and start
and build
with the engine for an hour and a half.
Well, I mean, there are pros and cons to this. Okay, you could put in a game like Fallout New Vegas, which apparently I hadn't played it, but was just absolutely riddled with bugs when it came out, and they've slowly patched it over time. And I agree that that's bad to do that. But at the same time, you look at a game like Burnout, which has been patched to include all sorts of new content. Even now, they've got a couple of new things coming out on Burnout. Even 2 years later,
to me, that's not a patch. That's like an improvement. It's not fixing something that's broken. It's improving an experience based on the telemetry they're getting back from the users. Like, that's another thing entirely. Like, I don't have a problem altering the game after I've bought it. I just don't want to have. I don't want to have to go through that process.
No, I mean,
every time
you can't have. I think
it's the ability to be able to patch a game and the ability to get these fixes is good. But I think developers look at that as an excuse to ship a buggy product, which is not good.
Well, you can't have downloadable content and cool patches without the shitty developers having the awful patches for bug-ridden games. You can't have both ways. Anyway, so probably $150 May 15th. Go get you one.
So you can buy two Wiis or a 3DS.
Oh, good lord. Wait, no, wait. How much is it really $300? I thought it was...
No, it's $250. So, 3DS and a game.
Dude, I want me one of them Red Wiis. They still got them around? They had the Mario tape in it? I still do not own a Wii. Here it is, like, 6 years later. Still don't own a Wii. I like the Wii, but Nintendo, quit fucking
you're
me,
not,
Nintendo.
You're not missing much. You're not missing much at this point.
And I got, what's it called? The Last Zelda, you know, it came out on GameCube. And technically, the GameCube version of that game is the true version. Because all they did to get the right hand... did we talk about this? How Link in the Wii version has the sword in his right hand, but always when they've drawn Link, he always has the sword in his left hand. They just flipped the video. Like, that's it. They didn't redesign any assets. They just flipped the video for the Wii version. So when you're playing the Wii version of Twilight Princess, you are getting flipped Zelda. So, like, all the signposts are technically backwards.
I got the Wii version of Twilight Princess, and I couldn't play just because of the waggle. Like, if I go back and play it, like, I will go look for a GameCube version and play it on a fucking controller the way it was meant to be played.
I don't know what the future of gaming holds, but I feel like the next console generation, we're going to get away from this you know, controller nonsense, I hope. I mean, not that it's shitty, not that it's all awful, but when push comes to shove, the best control you can have is direct hand manipulation. And unless the Kinect or these devices can manipulate that, I don't see it. I don't see it continuing on to the PS4.
Well, I mean, it's
Wii 2.
It's a novel thing, but I think, you know, in the end, gamers will want the quickest or the least lag between thinking it in your brain and your character doing it on the screen. So
right.
The quickest way to do that is just push a button. You know, move a stick. And, you know, gamers in the end do not want to wag their arms around the room. Like, that's a lot of shit that needs to happen between you thinking about it and your character on the screen doing it.
Technically, I wag my arm in this room about twice a day. But luckily, we don't podcast during that time. Just, Vic, you got any more news for us?
But look, Blake Buck, if there is a button for that...
God, I wish there was.
See, that's my point.
You got any more news for us, Jessica or William Miller, either of you guys?
I got one more little bit. I thought this bears mentioning. The Grammys have decided to accept music from video games as part of their awards. So,
it's about damn time.
So in February 2011, there was a video game track that won a Grammy, and that was Baba Yoda. Which is the theme song for Civilization 4. But
Baba O'Reilly by The Who? Is that the same thing?
Yes, the same thing. It only won that because it made an appearance in some movie or some TV show or something.
Okay.
So by a technicality, and because it was awesome, it won a Grammy. But
is this in Civ 4 or Civ 5?
Civ 4. It's the theme music to Civ 4. You know when you got the world? Yeah.
Don't worry, I got it.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, no more technicalities. Sounds like they're going to start opening it up. I think there's been some awesome video game music out there. And this is a discussion for a show where, you know, we have some authorities on the subject on the show. But I think this is great.
No, I totally agree. I mean, you know, something like... I mean, I'm sure there are better examples, but like the music from Halo 3 is just as good as any cinematic score out there.
Sure. I think you can, at this point, you know, it's weird to think about the lines between like movies and games and even the music industry about there's so much convergence nowadays, particularly with these big titles. I mean, look at, what was it, Black Ops? You know, it's licensed all that Rolling Stone music. I don't know. It seems like what is the future going to hold? I mean, I don't want to say like, oh, movies are going to go away and games are going to replace movies. But at some point we will get to that level, I think, where it's like, what is the difference?
I don't think they're going to get replaced, but I think, you know, I mean, the move to include games as a media considered for things like Grammys and stuff. I think that's the natural progression of it.
Now, I do have one problem with this whole thing. And I talked to you about this earlier, William Miller. But very few websites or gaming publications or awards programs, they usually have a best game sound or best game soundtrack. Very few have awards for sound design. And
yeah.
Sound design is so crucial in games. And it's really kind of sad that like people don't get recognized to the point that they should. I remember when I played, to bring this up again, I don't know why it came to me, SSX Tricky, okay? You play SSX Tricky, and you're doing a little, I mean, and that kid came out, God, 2000, maybe 2002? I mean, this is a long time ago.
Yeah, it was like 2001, 2002.
Yeah. But that game, you would do a trick, and sort of the whole soundtrack would drop out, and you had this like when you're doing a big trick, flying off the mountain, you know, and then you would land it, and then like the soundtrack would pick back up, and it would be this really visceral moment, you know, especially since it had Run DMC. Oh my God, and Rozelle the beatboxer in that game, dude, he is so good. I wish I was as good as Rozelle. My point though is like stuff like that never really gets noticed, or Black. Or any of Criterion's games. That's what we were talking about earlier, Wayne Miller. How about like, when you're grinding against another car in Burnout, you hear like leopards growling. And they have just ingenious sound design, but nobody really appreciates good sound design in the gaming industry. And I feel like that should be honored just as much as soundtracks, if not even more. Because if you look at Black, this is a class. I don't know if we talked about this before. Two games that came out around the same time that you can directly compare. What's it called? Killzone and Black. I believe they came out 2004, 2005, maybe about a month apart, almost the same time. Killzone, you fire a gun, it sounds like this. Black, you fire a gun, it's like blah. I mean, that's what made that game. It wasn't a really great shooter, but the visceralness of firing those weapons, it was like Zeus sending fucking thunderbolts on mortals when you fired the shotgun.
Blake, look, I'm going to make a first-person shooter. I'm going to get a soundbite of you doing that. And that will be the sound the gun makes.
Ladies.
Well, as we all know, Blake Buck is no stranger to video game sound. Wasn't your voice in a game? Weren't you in a Freeverse game at some point?
Was I?
Yeah, weren't you the voice of some like enemy in
I think you're in Wingnuts 2, Blake.
Yeah,
am
Wingnuts
I?
2.
I drunk I asshole. Don't. No, whoa. First of all, the reason that I don't remember that is not because I'm drunk, okay? The reason I don't remember is that I have a terrible memory. The second thing is, I am drunk. So are you. Oh, fuck you, man.
Anyway, what were we even talking? Oh, so for Blake Buck's Burger Quest, I've requested Blake record.
No, whoa. Have you actually have you mentioned this on the show before? Because I don't think.
Yeah, we talked about it at the end of last show.
Oh, okay. I didn't think you'd officially said anything.
I'm going to get Blake Buck to lend his voice to himself in his own game. Yeah, that.
Don't worry. I'll put some black shotgun noises under my ooze. Let's make it a little better.
I'm going to mix it in real nice with like the 8-bit stuff I've got going on. It's going to be just like Criterion, y'all.
Now, I'm telling you, Criterion, great. That's the one thing above all others that makes their games great is sound design. I cannot stress how important that is in a game. Oh, man.
I think their games look really good, too.
Sure, but graphically, the thing that... It's so visceral, the games you play. And I think 80% of that, maybe not 80, but a large percent of that is the sound design. They've got, and I wish like that guy, whoever, because it's one guy who's doing that, and he's a fucking hero, and no one knows who he is, and he's unrecognized by the entire gaming industry. I bet he listens to this show. You send us an email. You get a goddamn award, sir.
Dude, I was at the university a couple weeks ago looking at some student projects. They had their like midterms or something, and I was, you know, one of the industry guests they had in there to look at projects. And so with me came a couple of my buddies from work. One of them, his name is Jose, and he's a programmer. Like, I don't talk to him very much, whatever. So we started chatting, and I'm like, so, you know, where'd you work before you came to Big Huge? And he's like, oh, Criterion. I was a graphics programmer. Mind blown. I was like, dude, Burnout, my favorite game of all time. And now he's my favorite person of all time.
You know, sometimes my university calls me up to make talks. And, you know.
No, it wasn't my university.
Oh, well, you know, they asked me to bring me and some other alcoholics I know. And we, you know, just. I want to weep!
My university calls me up to ask for more money.
Don't give them your email, man. They'll be hounding you till the day you die. All right, last story. Unless, Jessica, did you have any more stories for us? I got one more.
Nah, I got shit.
All right. This is actually a few weeks old, but I figure we should talk about it just because how much I hate it. It came out April 1st. Leaked Forza 4 video confirms Kinect features. So this is maybe a 5 or 6 minute video for Forza 4. And it's got a lot of footage from the game. Shows off some where you're going to be able to use your hands to do the Kinect thing. Or it's got head tracking where you can like look around your car. You know, oh, what's to the left of me? You look to the left a little bit and it shows you the car to the left or the right. And it was a cool video. But the reason I bring this up is because all over the trailer that came out for this, it says, for internal use only, totally don't leak this. My point is that this whole thing smells like marketing juice all over it, but apparently it is a leaked video. And the larger question I'm asking is, what role does that play in the gaming industry where, you know, I'm sure, okay, if not this, maybe this particular instance, something has been, I'm using air quotes, fake leaked in order to generate buzz. And is that an okay thing to do? Is that...
Oh, dude, that shit happens all the time.
I think it does.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know. And is that something you do? Is that part of your marketing strategy to fake leak something?
Well, I think, yeah, I think half the things that... At least half the things that you have seen in the last whatever many years that have been leaked on purpose.
Right.
I think calling it leaked lets people feel like they're discovering this thing, like no one else has seen this, like and also like, oh, this is not okay, like they're circumventing the system somehow.
Right,
like,
yeah.
You know.
It's like
all of it was planned except for Ikaruga on Xperia.
Yeah. That one was
Do not bring that up. We are it is hot water.
Sorry about that.
We did that. Whoops.
I'm glad nobody listens to this.
No, don't say that. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna go to the bar and I'm gonna go up to a girl and I'm gonna be like, this just leaked, my penis is big. You got insider info, but it ain't true. It's very small. Anyway, let's move on to releases. All right, this week in releases, I'm excited about this one. Mortal Kombat coming out for PlayStation 3, Xbox 360. Now, this game is simply called Mortal Kombat, not Mortal Kombat Armageddon Double Alliance 8. Simply Mortal Kombat. And, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago. I think this game looks absolutely stellar. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it does.
I think it looks great.
Yeah, this looks good.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's an Unreal game, isn't it?
I think you're right. I could maybe click on this.
Because I remember there was a thing at GDC last year where they were talking about how they juked Unreal Engine to run it locked 50 or 60 frames a second. Because that's real important on these fighting games.
Yeah.
Is have that locked frame rate.
And also, you know, that's the other thing about fighting games. Fighting games always, like, spend all of their polygons on the models. And, like, the models in this game look fantastic. Like, you know, fighting games and racing games can always cheat because they can invest all their polygons in one specific asset and keep all the other assets very simple. Dudes fighting, cars racing. Ground's flat.
Yeah, racing games do that.
You don't have to have a whole lot of fancy stuff to have road turn left.
50% of their CPU and their GPU is like car paint shader.
Right. Anyway, you know, I don't want to shit all over Midway, but honestly, Midway has had this franchise for years and has just fucking squandered it. Just run it into the ground with bad... I mean, okay, maybe Armageddon was all right, but just bad releases. And I feel like they've finally gone back to their roots like they should have done. They should have stuck to this formula from the beginning. I think that this is going to be... who is the developer on this? I think they're going to do a fantastic job of returning this franchise to where it needs to be.
Also, I don't think it's so much returning to its roots. It's finding its roots. I mean, Mortal Kombat really has always been about the spectacle.
Right,
and it's really
right.
like the original Mortal Kombat... wasn't that good of a fighting game
right,
at all.
Exactly.
Like, it was kind of hearted.
Right, exactly like Burnout. So, Burnout is not about being a serious racing game. Burnout is about the spectacle. That's exact. It is arcade fighting at its purest, Mortal Kombat. And I'm glad that they've, at least seemingly, I mean, we haven't played it yet, but they've seemingly returned to those roots.
You know, I mean, this Mortal Kombat actually does try to be a fighting game with, you know, good fighting game mechanics, and you know, it feels like something that can be learned and mastered, as opposed to the original Mortal Kombat, which was pick Sub-Zero, freeze, uppercut, freeze, uppercut, freeze, uppercut, win.
And dude, they are spending I've seen a mountain of marketing on this game too. So I'm really glad to see this. A franchise that has kind of toiled for years. It seems like they're really going to hit it out of the park with this release, and I hope that's what happens. Maybe not, though. We'll see. Here, I'll take this next one. SOCOM 4, U.S. Navy SEALs, Sony's seminal shooter returns to the series creator Zipper Interactive. Zipper Interactive used to be owned by Microsoft, if I'm not mistaken. They did MechWarrior 3, didn't they? No?
Couldn't tell you.
I'm pretty sure Zipper Interactive did MechWarrior 3. But with a full single-player campaign set in Southeast Asia and 32 multiplayer, I guess SOCOM is still a big franchise? I mean, I know back in the PlayStation 2 days it was. It seems like they haven't really had a big release in a number of years.
Yeah, I mean it seems generic. Like, I haven't really heard of... I mean, the thing is, I can't tell these games apart anymore. But like
Call of Duty, SOCOM, whatever. It's all shoot other dudes.
Yeah, if you enjoy shooting other dudes, I'm sure you'll find something to like in this somewhere.
Jessica, take these next few.
All right, Portal 2 coming out for PC, Xbox 360, and Mac. Also the PS3. It's worth noting that if you buy the PS3 version, you will also get the Steam version for free.
That pisses me off. I ain't got no PS3.
Well, why not, Blake Buck?
Got to get that PS trip. I thought your brother bought like a...
Yeah, he did, and he gave the old one to my parents.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So they could watch deep Blu-rays. And here I am on Broke Street. I would have sold it for yay.
So, yeah, Portal 2 is new Portal.
Let's take it. Now, what do you guys... I mean, this... There hasn't been a whole lot of... I mean, I guess there's been some marketing, but what do you guys think about Portal?
No, it's been a shitload of marketing.
Has there?
Like, the website that I'm looking at is Portal 2 themed.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's all over GameStop right now, but...
I've seen TV spots for it.
Do you think it'll have the success of... The original, was it a breakout success? Because it was bundled in with, at least console-wise, with the... what's it called? Orange Box.
I mean, it's hard to tell if it was a breakout success financially, because that was the Orange Box selling well, and that had a lot of great games in it.
Right.
It was a breakout success critically.
Do you think this will recapture? Because it seems like, I don't know, I don't want to sound like a cynic, and God knows William Miller hates this game. But it seems like the original was so, I dare say, original. And it seems like the sequel would not be able to recapture that sense of wonder that the first one had.
Yeah. I think one of the things that made that first one really good was the storytelling in it. And that's one of those games that tells story without having cutscenes. I mean, it has the computer that's talking shit, but... A lot of the cool storytelling moments, you know, for instance, the scene where you're being lowered into the fire is one of my favorite scenes for a video game ever, because that's one of those things where, you know, you're up until that point, you're just happily following directions. And then that's the point where you have to sort of consciously stop following the directions of the game and sort of break out and do your own thing. Like That was a very cool moment for me, and it's just things like that that made that game really cool. So I think if they just have portal puzzles, like, it'll be okay. It'll be
right.
You know,
that's
it can be good,
yeah.
But
I think you're exactly right. The recapturing that sort of feel is going to be very difficult, and I hope they can do it. But ultimate skeptic.
I mean, I'm willing to buy the game to try it, because I love Portal. So I'll gladly give this one the benefit of the doubt. Like, I'm not going to go in this cynically, but you know, it has a lot to live up to.
Right. All right. So, what else we got?
Coming up, we have Final Fantasy IV, the complete collection for PSP. So, this has Final Fantasy IV and The After Years in one collection. Now, I've never played The After Years, and I clicked on this, and the first
That sounds like when I was in, like, elementary, and I couldn't go home because my mom wasn't off. And I had to, like, do homework.
So I know on the Wii there are a bunch of extra Final Fantasy IV games, like but I click this and the first thing I see is a 3D screenshot of a baby and I'm like, okay.
What was that? Now one of them just came out on iPhone. They did a whole big re-release. I think it was, is it 4, the one that just came out on iPhone?
4 didn't come out. 1 and 2 are out.
No, but is that the one that just came out too? No.
Oh, no. Three just came out.
Three just came out on iPhone. That's right.
But it's the shitty 3D DS remake of 3.
No. Didn't William Miller, you said that was a good remake.
Oh, yeah. The DS remake. All of the 3D DS remakes of the Final Fantasy games have been excellent.
I didn't like them.
I loved them. They were really good.
I thought they slowed down the pace. I thought the 3D was needless and ugly.
Oh, I thought it was great. Have you played the iPad version? The iPhone version?
No, I haven't even bought it because I didn't.
Apparently, that's great too. It's just like the same graphics and stuff. It's pretty much a port, but it's all up-rezzed and looks real nice. I thought that was a great game, both 3 and
4. I'm looking at the screen.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't buy it because I grabbed the DS one. I didn't like it, so I'm like, why would I buy the same game again?
Four is definitely better on than 3. That was like, much.
I'm looking at the screen now. This one's for PSP. I'm looking at the screenshots. This does have some 3D cutscenes, but it is the classic 2D gameplay. But again, with up-resing and you know, the up-resing of the portraits that are very, you know, hand drawn kind of thing. So, God, who's playing PSP? I want like the fucking PSP gamers to unite and like send us an email and be like, "We matter. Quit shitting on us."
Well, I mean, in Japan, the original PSP is outselling the 3DS.
Well, no, it's so, Dragon. What is it? Dragon Hunter? No, Monster Hunter. That's all they play over there. I mean, you hit like, I don't know, what's middle school in Japan, whatever that is. You hit that, you gotta go buy a goddamn Monster Hunter. Anyway, Wee Miller, you want to take these last two or three here?
All right, we got Conduit 2.
Conduit, renowned for having the worst box art of all time.
Well, they've done a little better this time.
Did they?
Now it's just a big man with a gun.
Did
so
they?
At least it'll blend in with the other titles that are the same. I don't know. This is the Wii shooter that we panned when the first one came out. I mean, it's like, you know,
yeah, I'm looking at screenshots.
It's like all of the reviews of these of this game, and
any first person
willing to
Wii
bet
shooter
the next one. Yeah, it's just like, okay, that was great for the Wii, you know?
Right. It looks,
all right, that was fun.
It looks like GoldenEye or Perfect Dark. It's like, good job being 10 years too late.
You know what? I don't, like, it pisses me off that people make games like this because it's totally trying to fill a niche. It's like, all right, I got it. We're going to make a company. We're going to make a first-person shooter for the Wii because there are people there that will buy it. Not because, man, I want to make this great game.
Right. It's they're like the Game Loft of the Wii.
Let me step back a little bit. Like, I'm sure there were people that were working on Conduit that thought that the thing that they were making was like the next big thing, that they're passionate about the IP and all that. But at the end of the day, like, whatever executive mucky muck made the decision to put the damn thing on Wii, destroyed the game because there's no audience for it there.
I think there is. I mean, I don't think you can say that. I do think there is.
Dude, the thing sold less than 1 million copies, the first one. I don't even understand how they have enough money to make a second one.
That's probably true.
I don't know. We also got Limbo.
No. This is a triple XBLA.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. XBLA Live Arcade.
It's got Trials HD, Limbo, and Splosion Man.
I like all those games.
You know, I guess there are people out there who don't have Xbox internet connections, and I guess these releases make sense, but
yeah, it seems
how many people
to me,
are out there who have an Xbox 360 and don't have, you know what, if you bought an Xbox and you don't have internet, something's fucking wrong with you, okay? Do you know how much shit there is on the internet? Way more important than an Xbox, dude.
Yeah, Blake saw a breast for the first time on the internet.
There are breasts! You can't even listen to our show. You know, fuck that. You can't even listen to our show if you don't have internet.
Get out. Yeah, I was going to say, if you don't have internet, you can't listen to this show, so we can talk as much shit about them as we want. Yeah,
eat a dick.
Fucking Luddites.
Right. We've also got Section 8, Prejudice. I don't even know what this is. It looks exactly like Conduit, except the man has a gun, like, he's holding
it's pointing the other direction.
It's pointing the other direction.
So in Conduit, you shoot to the upper left of the screen. And in Section 8, you shoot to the bottom sort of right of the screen.
All right. I think we got this covered.
Are these titles using the same font? Or am I just seeing things?
Are they really? Oh,
they
wow.
They look pretty similar.
It's pretty close.
Military, colon, the font. All right, it's time for judgment. All right, guys, for judgment this week, I've got on the Xbox Live Arcade a game called Torchlight. Now, who here has played Torchlight in some iteration?
I keep getting Torchlight confused with Trine, but I know the game you're talking about. It's pretty fun.
I've not played Trine. I've only played Torchlight. Jessica, have you played Torchlight?
I have not.
Well, basically, Torchlight is a Diablo clone, and we talked about this when it came out, and the main thing we shit on about it was is that it's only single player. So it's a single player Diablo 2, basically, clone. Now, you know, I can see how, I understand why we shit on it, and at the same time, I do shit on it because it doesn't have a multiplayer. And I would like to see a Torchlight 2 with multiplayer. But, you know, there's something to be said about going through dungeons and shooting stuff and leveling up and getting your gear. I guess really what I'm getting at, this game is all about progression addiction. Just the same way as, you know, Farmville or Coin Dozer or any of those awful games. You play through it and it's a fairly...
Or even the same as Diablo.
Right, or what were some of those...
I mean, let's not pretend that Diablo was above that.
Right. What were some of those PlayStation era, like... Champions of Norrath and Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance.
Yeah. I mean, any massive multiplayer game.
No, they weren't MMOs. I mean, you could play them online, but they were more like Phantasy Star Online in that you only played with like maybe two or three other people. But my point is that it's not an amazing game. You know, it's not going to blow your socks off. But at the same time, I just got a deep in my gut some sort of love for these. Just go through the dungeon and shooting stuff, and now I got a cool hat. I'll put my cool hat on. My hat gives me a plus 10 to cut. Now I'm cutting better. You get locked into it. And I know from just on paper, it's not really a good game. I guess on a pure sense, it's a decent game, but nothing innovative. We talked about this before. Good games either innovate or refine. And this is a game that does exactly what it sets out to do very well. So I can't say, if you're looking for the most amazing RPG experience of all time, play Torchlight, because that's not it. But if you're looking for an old school, just going, it's the same sort of way as Diablo 1, in which you start in town, and then, devils be coming up from the mine. You go down into the mine, and then eventually you work your way, I hope to hell. I hope hell is the last level. So, not great, not amazing, but, you know, just for a good, feel-good, old-school RPG, I've got to give Torchlight the thumbs up.
You know, another game that I felt like that about was Deathspank. Did you ever play Deathspank?
I didn't, but you did talk about it. It does sound kind of similar to this.
Yeah, it's real similar. It's got, you know, a cool humor, and the loot churn, like that loot treadmill, is awesome in that game. You keep getting all this cool stuff, and it's real simple. There's no story. You're just cutting. You're looking for some MacGuffin somewhere, you know, and it's just like, whatever.
Oh, really? You're gonna bring Hitchcock into this.
I'm glad you caught that, Blake. I think
I read
everybody
books.
Knows MacGuffin comes from Hitchcock. Hitchcock made movies, you idiot.
What?
But yeah, I could totally get that. I mean, you know, I love Diablo for the story as much as the systems, but I think systems can entertain you if they
right.
hook you.
Yeah, that's
right
what way. I'm saying. It's not
because Deathspank is Ron Gilbert, who was the writer behind
Monkey Island.
Monkey Island,
right? Yeah, and it's just, it's you know, if you were to tell me, Blake, all right, here, without showing me any footage or anything, you're like, Blake, here's what this game is. I'd be like, that blows. I've played that already. Why wouldn't I just play Diablo? But it gets you, you know, it gets, you start playing it. You like, you know, you go, you can enchant items, and I know I shouldn't like it. I really shouldn't, but I've got that old school Diablo hankering inside. I just really want Diablo 2 on Xbox. That's what I really want. God, get it out there. What's wrong with you, Blizzard?
I want Diablo 3 on anything.
Yeah, why isn't Diablo 3 on consoles? Because honestly, why not? It seems like a much smarter move.
I thought they were considering it at one point.
Were they? I never read that.
I don't know. For some reason, I remember seeing that. Hmm. Or seeing talk about it.
Well, it seems like a smart move, but again, Blizzard, I mean, what was their last console game? The Lost Vikings on Game Boy? Vikings. I like how we both knew that, like, instantly.
Oh, dude, so, like, this April Fool's from Blizzard was lame.
Oh, yeah.
But last April Fool's, they had some pretty clever, high production value thing. But the best thing was this wallpaper somebody did of Blackthorn 2. Blake, I think you might have seen this picture. It was just like Blackthorn on a surfboard, and there's this giant shark, and he's like shooting the shark in the face. It's just the most ridiculous image. Dude, it's all like pixel painted. Oh my
Blackthorn
god!
Blackthorn.
The thing is, I would play the shit out of that.
Yeah, right. And I almost think like Blizzard, you're kind of squandering your IPs because, like, okay, you don't have to like spend all your time and money developing Blackthorn 2 on XBLA, but why not?
Look, they could take like three dudes for 2 months and make Blackthorn 2.
I mean,
you know, it'd be nothing.
And that game was basically a carbon copy of Prince of Persia, except with shotgun.
You know what? You know what? Attention, game companies. The game that you've made up for April Fool's is probably more interesting than whatever game you were actually working on.
Probably so. Anyway, we gotta move on. It's time for feedback.
This is from UncoolMike00 from Jacksonville, Florida. He writes, first off, I've been listening for about 3 to 4 years now. You guys are high goddamn larious.
Oh, good.
I guess that's a colloquialism in Jacksonville. I'm glad Blake finally got off his ass and started putting these shits out after what I could only believe was some kind of 8-month radio fame inducing butterbender.
That's true.
Blake got so famous that he reached this critical mass of money where he was able to just buy butter.
That's why Blake poor now. I spend it all on butter.
Yeah. Next on VH1 Behind the Podcast.
I would just like the record to state, here I am doing all the work, and I'm still getting shit on. What the fuck is it? Like, where's the praise? Fuck you. Delete email. Get out.
He goes on, but this is my question. As veritable idols of the gaming community, I was just curious as to some of the tapes that you've made that made you guys fall in love with gaming. Don't say fucking Mario or Mario Bros or Pong or any of that bullshit. I just wanted to know the games that you played 1,000 or 100 times and still enjoy, and why. Two of you being devs, I know something must have inspired you. Humbly and faithfully. P.S. Blake smart, but Blake poor. WTF.
Me too.
Wow, that's...
I'd have to say, I just played this game the other day, and I was thinking, damn fine game. Or then earlier this podcast, Super Metroid up there. Chrono Trigger up there. And I guess you could say, oh, well, it's because you played it when you were, you know, an adolescent and just learning about games. But, man, Chrono Trigger, I don't think any game has approached the plot in terms of, like, just fantastic storytelling that Chrono Trigger has.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just perfectly perfectly paced and wonderfully told. It's got really endearing characters. Like, you don't really hate anybody.
Yeah. But then again, I mean,
I can see that.
We do get into the argument of we are more jaded now, and, you know, I guess that happens.
Well, the thing is, like, the games that I love, I still love. Like, they don't become shitty games over time. Like for me, my inspirations are Gradius 3 for Super Nintendo.
Yeah, but I mean, here's my, just let me interrupt for a second. Is some kid yeah. out there now, like, his great game is like World of Tanks? He's like, man, I remember when World of Tanks came out. And that was just unbelievable.
I mean, that's perfectly possible. I mean, you I know, guess. kids will play, you know, old games, and it's they don't like them. Like they're primitive. They're
right.
You know, I think, you know,
just like instance, if you were like, oh, what do you?
There's like a kid at work who grew up playing Ocarina of Time. You know, that's his inspirational game.
Well, and, that is a know, still like very very good game.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying it's not.
Anyway, what are your tapes, Justin Fink?
Gradius 3. In terms of just the, you know, like it's not the best space shooter, but it felt really good. Like I think that is in huge part due to just the music. Another one obviously is Robotron.
That's an old one.
That's a very old one, and I guess, you know, things like Smash TV, you know, contemporaries of that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, some people older than us might say, like, "Oh, Yar's Revenge." Gaming has never approached Yar's Revenge with that fucking. What a fucking stupid game! My brother loves Yar's Revenge. I just, oh god. Anyway, what else were you saying? Just to fake any others?
No, those are the two at the tip of my brain. I mean, there's also, you know, in terms of my favorite games, things like Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy VI, that, you know, that the Cave Story, that kind of stuff. You know, like, those are my favorite games, but in terms of what I think about when I'm making games, it comes more to things like Gradius, things like Robotron, things like Smash TV.
Right. What about you, William Miller? What you got?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a list of the stock answers, the ones that I played when I was a kid that I really liked. I'll leave those out. The things that I think about when I make games are games like Ultima 6 or Ultima Underworld or those great, like, proto-open-world role-playing games. Riven.
Riven, dude, I was going to say that. I was thinking, I was like, I better mention Riven before William Miller does. God damn it!
gotcha. For me, that was like the first game that really put me in another place. Like, all the other games, you know, I got really into them, but Riven, like, took me out of my, you know,
yeah, right, out of my, like, chair, Riven, in front of my Riven computer. Was like me getting high before I knew what drugs were.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, just a phenomenal game. Also, there's a game on Super Nintendo. I have not been able to find anybody that's played this game. It's a Super Nintendo game called Equinox.
Oh yeah, that was a RPG, I think, right?
It was not really. It was an isometric. It was a lot like Cadaver or any of the sort of Bitmap Brothers games on PC, but it was sort of an adventure, sort of Zelda game. But it was all isometric, and the art was really cool, and it had like this really interesting, like, these interesting characters, a really interesting style, and I like that game quite a bit.
You ever play, it was an NES game called Solstice, William Miller?
Yeah.
Okay, Equinox is the sequel to Solstice.
Oh, is it really? Oh.
Wait, did you?
Okay, well, I guess that makes sense.
Wait, is that any way related together? To Star Tropics? Because it was kind of the same way, Star Tropics and its sequel.
No. Dude, so, yeah, Star Tropics is something totally different.
I love
Star Tropics. That was a cool-ass game,
actually.
That
was a good damn game.
Man, I remember they reintroduced, like, Nintendo made this really last ditch effort to squeeze the last little bits of toothpaste out of the tube for the NES. They re-released the little bitty NES. Remember that? It was like teeny tiny.
Yeah.
And they bundled it with Star Tropics. I remember that. So anyway, but more recently, the game that's always in the back. Yeah,
maybe
of my mind,
maybe we should all do like new ones, because we can't always have little tiny ones when we were kids. It's not fair.
So more recently, I've got two on my mind. Space Funeral. That game was really cool. And if you haven't played it, go play it. I'm not going to say any more. Just stick with it. You can beat it in like 30 minutes. It's a very good game. And but the one that's at the forefront is Charles Barkley's Shut Up and Jam Gaiden.
All right.
That game... That game has the funniest fucking story in it. Talk about, like, oh man, Oh, man. I love that game. And I can't find it anywhere. Like, you can't play that game anymore. I don't know where you get it.
Has it been taken down?
Or is it just, I don't know if it's been taken down. It's just nobody...
no one's played it but you.
Yeah, right. I'm the if you want a good, like, 10 minutes, or in the case of Blake Buck, it'd be about an hour because he takes so damn long to read. If you go on Wikipedia and look up the Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam Guide and just read the plot synopsis. That's all you got to do. It's really detailed. Just read that, and you've got it. So funny. All right.
I guess if I had to name a recent game, it's going to be Half-Life 2. That's so good. So good. Joseph, what's your recent game?
Recent games, I would say, I wouldn't make a game like it, but Braid was really inspiring to me. Super Meat Boy is really inspiring. Mm. I would say VVVVVV.
Right.
Is just in terms of what one person can do with a minimal style is a really inspiring game.
All right, so there you have it. What's this guy's name? Uncool Mike 00. You know what's uncool? Yeah, your man. Stupid name. You know what? Pick.
Before I was just going to say, before Blake shits all over you, thank you for writing in, and thank you also for listening for 4 goddamn years to the show. I can't believe that.
Seriously, fuck you, is what I'm getting at. All right, I love you. We got a couple of voicemails. here, I'll just play them for you.
Hey guys, it's KG again. Just listening to the podcast part where you're talking about paying real money for in-game things. And I got an idea for you guys. Why don't you make a first-person shooter and you actually have to pay for the bullets? So when you run out of bullets, you can just, like a message comes up, and it's like 50 Microsoft points per, like, clip. And you can make a shitload of money doing that. And you guys can give me half of that once you actually do that. So, okay, I'll be expecting a check in the mail. Thank
you. So here, one thing I've discovered, and Justific, I'm sure you could shed light on this too, about microtransactions in games. And this, I don't know if you're being tongue-in-cheek with your suggestion or not, but it's stupid. And I'll tell you why. People don't want to spend currency on things that go away.
I think he was being tongue-in-cheek, just for
okay
the record.
Well, good. But if you want to set up a microtransaction system, don't sell consumable shit. Or if you're going to sell consumable shit, make sure that it translates more or less directly to shit that stays. So for example, if you're going to sell, you know, PowerPoint or something so you can play your, you know, whateverville for a little while longer, make sure that you can at least get something that's permanent out of that. You know what I mean? Like, people want the persistence. They want the permanence. So selling bullets, not a great idea.
Hmm.
Well, I mean,
and that's what that game.
You say that, but the company that owns my talents, and the company that owns that company, and the bigger company that owns them, are all funded by that very concept.
Ugh.
Like, I'm not saying it's good by any means. Don't fire me, but. You know, it's people do buy.
Yeah,
that.
People do pay for it. I mean, you look at
all of your NG Moco games, right? Like the Wii Rule or whatever. All those tapes. You buy things that are essentially, you buy a building, right? You plop the building down, you get to keep it.
No, right? you buy this consumable stuff, this second currency, if you will.
Okay, you buy the derivative currency, but that translates almost directly within one play session or two. Well, to something that you get to keep.
Yeah, there's a
it might be something as simple as like a few more experience points.
You got to remember, there's also that game that's like really big on the iPhone App Store right now, on the free App Store. It's called, like, I think it's like Contract Killer or something like that. And you literally, I don't know if you have to literally buy bullets as our voicemail suggested, but you have to buy guns and you can only get X number of bullets for them a day. And it's almost the same thing that this guy is talking about. And I think Justin Fick is right. I think if you get hooked on these games, just like if, you know, an alcoholic like me gets hooked on gambling, you know, it people will pay it if they want the thing. Even if the thing is stupid and they know they shouldn't want it, if they get hooked on it, you know, what difference does it make to them?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the other thing, too, is there are a lot of free-to-play games that give you so many plays per day, and you can pay for more.
Right.
You know, so like if you have a game where you have 100 hit points and you can fight like four times and you're out of hit points, well, you can replenish it for this second currency that you can pay a dollar for.
Oh, but there's no way that this should be regulated or, you know, stopped at all because it's a free enterprise capitalism. Oh, no, I hate it. Die.
I think it's gonna end up getting regulated in the end.
Hopefully, that's why I'm going broke. Can't stop playing NG Moco's fantastic games. All right, we got a couple more voicemails.
Hey guys, it's KG. A couple episodes ago, you were talking about Bungie's next project being some massive multiplayer space shooter. What they really ought to do is make a multiplayer version of Oni. You know, I think times have changed enough to where
it won't suck.
They can actually make that.
Man, our listeners are geniuses.
Okay, bye.
All right, now I think this next one. Let me look at this. Has there been? I don't think this. Did anybody play Oni? I just heard it sucked really bad.
I've never played Oni. Like, it was, at the time, there really wasn't any other type of game like it. I mean, with the gun and the hand to hand, and just how it flowed. But all games do that now.
I like how Oni means devil.
All right, good job, William. Our next voicemail.
Perhaps Devil May Cry, which is the same game.
Devil.
All right, Lords of Gaming. First of all, I want to say good job on the episodes. Where's the discussion? It's been 2 weeks. No discussion. Where's that at? Seriously, come on.
Look, what are we at now? We're at a fucking hour and fucking 20 minutes. Shut up!
make it 3 weeks with no discussion.
Right.
If you want to suggest topics... I mean, we talked about doing a discussion today, but we didn't talk about it.
We've talked about everything.
Well, the thing is, we kind of had like mini discussions for each That's new true. Story yeah. that we had. Like,
the best
we,
thing I could come up with is why Chung Lee's legs are so big.
Because that's how I like them. I'm not going to say anymore.
But I would totally get in on that, them codes investing, but I'm almost broke as Blake, so I can't do that. But yeah, and seriously, Bike Buck, I want to say good job. I was this close to going Blake dumb over those 8 months. I was like, oh, where in the fuck had Blake so dumb? It was getting too close, and then it came back.
Oh. You know what's really terrifying? Like, okay, thanks for the voicemail. We'll keep playing. He talks like we do.
No.
Blake smart and always has been smart, I gotta say.
Yeah.
He can't get a job, so I don't know. Blake smart is Daniel B, by the way. Never phoned in, but hey, why not? TK last week sucked. Like, he's all drunk. Oh, I'm drunk. Like, fuck home, I love you, man. Meet up. What? Seriously, like,
dude, I love it when our listeners not just shit on each other, but shit on TK. That, oh god, just take the heat off me for a little bit. Thank you.
I don't want to hear this junk. I'll hear good stuff. So I got my podcast. Anyway, yo, yes, TD Goat discussion, Blake Smart. That's it.
Best voicemail ever. Thank you. 10 out, a million battle points. Do we even still have those? Like, I haven't been keeping track. All right, well, I guess that does it for this week of the best damn podcast ever. What do you guys think about that?
Pretty good show, Blake.
It's a good show. We filled that out nice.
Dude, awesome. Matt, how could you bitch about the... Look, I mean, these shows just keep getting longer and longer. You're welcome, world. If you have any feedback for us, feedback@bestdamnpodcastever.com or call the listener line only if you're nice. 845-BATTLE-9. TK not allowed. Or all voicemails are required to include one TK insult. Anything else, gentlemen? Oh, we do have one more thing. I've been forgetting this. Special thanks to Craig Reed editing the podcast, doing a fantastic job. You're my hero, and if you weren't here, these shows would just not happen. They would just sit in a folder on my desktop and not come out. So thank you, Craig Reed. Thanks, everybody, for emailing us. From all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm Lee Miller.
I'm Justin Fink.
And we'll see you next time.
Boom.
It was a good fucking show.